Good morning, I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Astoria, John Jacob Astor and Thomas Jefferson's Lost Pacific Empire, a book by Peter Stark on the New York Times bestselling list. This book is bringing new attention to how vibrant and important this community was, this Pacific Northwest region in the history of the United States. And I'm so fortunate that today I have the author, Peter Stark, who lives in Missoula, Montana. He is here in Astoria today, and I have the opportunity to speak with him, and I'll tell you a little bit about him. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Hi, Donna. Delighted to be here.
Very happy you're here too, Peter. Peter Stark is an adventure and exploration writer. Born in Wisconsin, he studied English and anthropology at Dartmouth College. He took a master's in journalism from the University of Wisconsin and then headed off to the remote spots of the world, writing magazine articles and books. His home base is Missoula, Montana, although he and his family periodically live abroad for a year. Most recently, they lived in a small town in northeast Brazil. Peter is a longtime correspondent for Outside Magazine. His articles and essays have also appeared in the Smithsonian, The New Yorker, The New York Times Magazine, Men's Journal, and he is the author of 5 books, Driving to Greenland, Last Breath, at the Mercy of the River, Last Empty Places, and now Astoria. Peter Stark, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, you've just given the summary biography, and I'm not sure quite what more to add to that, other than I can say that the reason I got into this kind of writing, adventure and exploration writing, was, as you mentioned in the biography, that I grew up in this very adventurous family in Wisconsin. And plus, I had I loved literature, loved reading. My father was a very adventurous guy. Also, he loved local history, and he knew a lot about the fur trade in Wisconsin and the upper Great Lakes region. So when I, at one point in high school or early college, I said, well, I want to write fiction. I want to be a novelist. And I had an English professor advisor at Dartmouth who said, Stark, you can't make a living being a novelist. You know, it's not going to work. So I started thinking about journalism, and I started thinking about nonfiction. And eventually I went to grad school in journalism. And when I left graduate school in journalism, I was trying to decide, okay, where do I go next? What do I do next? And I decided I either wanted to be in the center of Manhattan, you know, biggest city in the world, being a journalist, or I wanted to be at the most remote area I could find. And I ended up, through a long series of events, looking for jobs in Alaska, took a train back through Montana, said, wow, this looks pretty remote, got off the train in Montana and started writing there, started working for a newspaper. Then I went into freelance writing after a couple of years in the newspaper business, into magazine writing. And I was thinking, okay, what do I write about? You know, here's the whole world before me as a freelance writer. And I thought, well, I should write about what I really love doing. And what I really love doing is having great adventures, going to faraway places, outdoor sports, things like that. And so that's how I started writing for Outside Magazine. And eventually I got into books, which led into adventure and exploration books. First, there were books and magazine articles when I was writing about my own adventures, like paddling down uncharted rivers in Africa in kayaks. And then as I aged a bit, I started thinking, well, I think I'd rather write about other people doing those things. And so I got into the business of writing about exploration history.
And Peter, why do you take time and spend and go to an international destination and live there with your family for a year? It sounds like this is something that you think is important.
Well, yes, we do. And my wife grew up abroad. Her father was a foreign correspondent. In fact, he was my professor of journalism at the University of Wisconsin. And he was one who introduced us, in fact. And she loves to travel, I mean, even more than I do. And she grew up abroad at periods of her life in Cairo and the Philippines and in Thailand. So she felt it's very important for our children to have this experience of living abroad. She taught dance she was a professor of dance for many years at the University of Montana, and would get a sabbatical every some years. And so we'd pick up the whole family and go we lived in Spain for part of a year. We lived in Mozambique in Africa for a full year. And then we lived in Brazil most recently in a very small town in northeastern Brazil for a year. So our kids landed in a little school in Brazil, and now they speak fluent Portuguese.
That is, I wish more families could do that with their children.
In fact, my wife's writing a blog about it for Outside Magazine about living abroad with kids.
And speaking of blogs, your website, what is your website, Peter?
It's peterstarkauthor.com.
Okay, that is a fabulous website. I encourage all of you to visit it because he has had so many adventures, and the blogs and the newsletter. I mean, it's just fascinating. It's a great website. So I encourage people to go to that website. How did you get this idea to write about Astoria? You had written these other books, outdoor kind of adventure type of books, and what made you look at doing a book about Astoria?
The last book I wrote was called The Last Empty Places, and it came out in 2010. And for part of my research for that book, that book profiled four different very remote and empty area, unpopulated areas of the country, one of them being Eastern Oregon. So I was doing research in Eastern Oregon, and I'm sure a lot of people here know Eastern Oregon. It is really unpopulated, and especially southeastern Oregon. And I was driving down a long, long, lonely road where I'm sure many of your listeners have driven at some point, and thinking, where am I going to spend the night? Because it was getting dark, and thinking I was going to sleep in the car in the ditch. And I came to a little town and stayed in a little motel. And the next morning I woke up and said, what the name of this town? John Day. John Day, Oregon. Who is John Day? And right then I did some research and found out John Day was one of the original Astorians, one of the original members of the overland expedition sent by John Jacob Astor in 1810. John Day had been starved, abandoned, poisoned himself by eating death camas, helped by Indians, captured by Indians, stripped naked, sent back into the wilderness, wandered all winter long trying to find his compatriots, was finally rescued, and then had to go back through the same territory where he suffered all this trauma. And John Day was so traumatized. I mean, I think literally he had what we'd call today PTSD. He faced with the prospect of going back through all this, he flipped out. I mean, he flipped out in the sense he was so traumatized, he tried to kill himself and put two pistols to his head and pulled the trigger. He didn't succeed, but he was had this amazing story of what he'd been through. And that just was the tip of the iceberg of what these historians had been through. And so when I read that story, it led to another story and another story. And I said, wow, this is a crazy, wild story. And it's really important, significant historically.
And actually, your book, Astoria, John Jacob Astor and Thomas Jefferson's Lost Pacific Empire, A Story of Wealth, Ambition, and Survival, is getting incredible reviews, great reviews all over the country. And the HarperCollins, the little blurb says, in 1810, John Jacob Astor sent out two advance parties to settle the wild, unclaimed western coast of North America. More than half of his men died violent deaths. The others survived starvation, madness, and greed to shape the destiny of a continent. And Kirkus Reviews said, a fast-paced, riveting account of exploration and settlement, suffering, treachery, and death. And Peter, most of our listeners do know the story of Astoria. I do. And yet I could not stop reading your book. It is a page turner. It is, how did you do that? The character development, how did you write this book?
Well, it was actually a pure pleasure to write this book. And I wanted it to be a page turner. And what I really wanted to do is focus on the adventure story. And I felt so fortunate that everything I've learned in 30 years of being a freelance writer in the adventure world and exploration world all kind of came to bear on this book. And so I really felt that I knew what I was doing when I wrote it. I know how to write an adventure story. There are great adventure stories in the history of in these events. And so what I had great resources because there are 7 or 8 journal accounts of the survivors of these first expeditions, 7 or 8 journal accounts and memoirs. And so I had those that I could work with directly, and I could really follow, in some cases, a day-by-day basis, what different people were experiencing, what they were going through. And plus there was Washington Irving's book where he, which had been written 20 years after these events, and we can talk about that a little bit too, where he and his researcher, his nephew Pierre, had interviewed some of the survivors. So there was a good material in Washington Irving's book as well.
Lewis and Clark get all the, you know, they get all the publicity and the acclaim. However, as Mac Burns of the Historical Society says, Lewis and Clark were just tourists. They're our first tourists here. And why do you think that the story of Astoria, the Astorians, is so much, it's not necessarily more compelling than Lewis and Clark, but there was so much more at stake.
There was so much more at stake. And in a way, you know, Lewis and Clark were incredible explorers. They really did a wonderful job. But their mission was much more narrowly defined than what the Astorians had to do. The Astorians they were charged with starting the first American colony on the West Coast and really settling the West Coast, starting this trans-Pacific, trans-global trade empire, fur posts all up and down the Rockies and the Columbia. Huge amount at stake that I think the Astorians also have, that the story is compelling because, one, there was so much at stake, and two, because so much went wrong. Whereas things went right for Lewis and Clark, things went very wrong for so much of what happened with the Astorians. And a lot of it was a matter of timing. A lot of it was a matter of leadership. I had a friend who is an English professor who read this book in galley form, and he said, yeah, Lewis and Clark got lucky. These guys didn't.
Indeed, that's true. I mean, what I love is that you put all of the stories in context. We know what's going on elsewhere in the nation, in the world, and the characters are alive. This story was made famous by Washington Irving, the book Astoria, you know, about 175 years ago. And yet you think that a lot of people just don't know about this story.
It's really surprising to me. I've been giving readings all over the country, and at every reading I ask how many people have heard this story. And you know how many people put up their hands? Mostly zero. So in some case, one or two. And unless you're in the Northwest, in Portland, I read, of course, people know it more. Even in Washington, where I've given in several readings, they don't know the story very well. A few people do. So I think you have to, especially your listeners here in Astoria and in the coastal region, have to realize while you might be familiar with this history, it's very unknown. It's forgotten on a national level. It's known to professional historians. And especially of Western history. It's taught in Western history courses, in Northwest history courses. That's still only a very small percentage of the population that would take that course. And it's only, you know, a very short section.
And it is a significant story. There are things that you discovered when you were doing this research, and you were able to research this even when you were in Brazil.
Yes. the miracle of the internet.
It's true. What were some things that surprised you when you were researching this, and what made you feel that this was such a compelling story that you wanted to write an entire book about the journey?
Well, there's certainly the adventure stories themselves, which are utterly compelling, and we can go into some of those. I mean, there's so many of them. That's the problem. There's so many crazy, wild adventures. But on the larger historical scale, what I found so fascinating was that these events were occurring. This is between 1810 and 1813, as probably many of your listeners know. This was occurring at a time when the geopolitical destiny of the North American continent was being shaped. It was still fluid, that these events and these decisions made by the leaders who were the leaders of the Astor's parties, you know, Captain Jonathan Thorne, Wilson Price Hunt, Duncan MacDougall, these decisions, and Astor himself, were they were pivotal decisions in how the continent ended up looking, especially the western part of the continent. And I tell audiences who don't know this story, I said, well, you know, if events had gone another way and Astor's vision had succeeded, the whole West Coast might now be a separate country called Astoria, and it might be under the benign dictatorship of the Astor family. I had another historian point out, well, it could have gone the other way, too, had events not transacted the way they did. If Astor had not succeeded at all, if Astoria, where we are now, did not exist, the entire West Coast might be, we might be sitting in British Columbia right now. So it could have gone either way. And it was just a pivotal moment in North American history. And that's what was a compelling reason for me to write this book.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn, and today it is my privilege to have in the studio Peter Stark. His New York Times bestselling book, Astoria, is on the lips of many Americans now, and I imagine this book is doing so well that internationally people will be reading this as well. The idea that this was so important to the shaping of what eventually became the United States, is a story that I think, even though we think we're familiar with, we don't know the details such as you are presenting them in this book.
Well, and some of the details, I mean, we can talk about the legacy of how this shook out, and because I think many of your listeners know the story itself, and that what was established as Astoria, as this emporium on the Pacific, which was going to be this huge epicenter of trade, of Pacific Rim trade, that Astor envisioned very early and that Thomas Jefferson envisioned very early. And of course, Jefferson was thinking of it as a separate country, a separate democracy on the West Coast that would spread democracy from the West Coast to the East. So grand visions, grand idea, that both of them had, very visionary men, and it took hold. It was got its roots down. It was established. Eventually, as you all know, your listeners, the War of 1812 interceded and a lot of other events, poor leadership decisions. Astor had a very poor line of communications, didn't even know his ship had arrived here for 2 years. Lots of issues going on that ultimately undermined Astoria in the way that Astor envisioned it. But there was a powerful legacy that grew out of it and that grew out of this place where we are sitting right here in the studio. A very profound legacy. And that is that this was the first American colony on the West Coast and the first colony at all for almost 2,000 miles of Pacific coast. And even though the British eventually took it over, that it became in American eyes, it opened American eyes to the existence of the Pacific coast and what the Pacific coast could be. And then in the 1820s, so this is, you know, 10 or 15 years after Astoria went over to the British that and became Fort George, in the 1820s, there was a cry for what became Manifest Destiny. There was a cry in Congress saying the United States is destined to go to the Pacific. And a lot of that cry to go to the Pacific, that westward movement, that we're destined to go to the Pacific as Americans, was based on the fact that Astoria was here, that John Jacob Astor had been here, that the colony was here. So that was one really important legacy. And then another was that the Overland Party, led by Wilson Price Hunt, who's, of course, the young New Jersey businessman who's never been in the wilderness before and is leading a party of huge party of 60 people across more than 1,000 miles of utterly uncharted to white people terrain, and gets stuck in Hell's Canyon in the middle of winter without food and smashed canoes and in the snows and people are dying of hunger and Marie Dorion is there with her two small boys and she's pregnant. I mean, I think many of your listeners know all these stories or some of these stories, but for all that stumbling around that Wilson Price Hunt did through the canyons of the West, lost, not being here where he should have been, he and his return party that went back a few months later, those were the guys who discovered what became the Oregon Trail. And the Oregon Trail, as we all know, became in the 1840s a pipeline of settlement to the West Coast. So they discovered the hard way how to get to the easy way to come to the West Coast by wagon. They discovered South Pass, where you could actually roll a wagon easily over the Rocky Mountains, the only place they could find in this whole region. And the Astorians also were the first whites who discovered the Willamette Valley, incredibly rich agricultural valley on the West Coast. And that became a tremendous magnet for the Western movement when it finally started. So they had a powerful legacy.
So even though, by John Jacob Astor's standards as a businessman, this venture, him sending the Tonkin and the Overland Party out to establish this fur trading empire on the West Coast, even though he might have looked at that as a failure, in fact, it was not a failure.
It was not a failure. I mean, it ultimately, his vision succeeded in a far grander way than he could have ever imagined. He didn't live to see it. He died in 1848. He died just as Oregon, let's see if I can get, you all know that your date's better than I do on this, but just as Oregon Territory was established. So just as the British and the Americans had reached a settlement on where the border would be drawn, what's, you know, now the U.S.-Canadian border, and that this would be American territory. So he died to see that, just barely. But his, I think that he would be stunned at what the West Coast is today, and Thomas Jefferson would be too. That you have to remember, it's something that's really easy for us to lose sight of, is how remote, how far away, how just utterly exposed and unknown the West Coast was in those days. I mean, just unknown. It was so far out there. And it was in my book, I say, and it's been, you know, this is established from various exploration accounts, that it was the least known inhabitable coast in the world at that point, the Northwest Coast was.
Even though I thought I knew Astoria's history, I have learned so much from reading this book. It's a terrific book, and if you want to get a copy of this book, all of our local bookstores, Lucy's and Godfather's, and our museums, the Flavelle Carriage House Museum and the Heritage Museum, they all have copies of Peter's book, and I urge you to get a copy of this book and read it. I didn't even realize you could survive after you've been scalped, by the way. I mean, that was just a small thing that I learned.
It was news to me, too.
So interesting. And Peter, what do you think about Astoria today, and what would you like? We just have a few minutes left. What would you like our listening audience here in Astoria, Oregon, you know, the Columbia Pacific region, obviously this radio station is listened to throughout the United States and worldwide on the web. What would you like to let people know about either your book or about Astoria?
Well, I think that what strikes me is that you have this incredibly rich history here. And of course, and we didn't talk about this, I talk about it quite a lot in the book, that the incredibly rich Native American history here, and that, you know, when I say it was uninhabited, least known inhabited coast, least known to white European powers, of course, there were Indian tribes here, very highly developed, you know, wonderfully elaborated ceremonial and material culture, this beautiful Northwest Coast art, that all was here for centuries and centuries before, of course, the people we're talking about showed up. That I do think that you have a legacy here that's really overlooked, and these events are so dramatic, these events between 1810 and 1813, so dramatic, and they're so profound historically. And I think while you may know them in Astoria, and I suspect a lot of people don't know them fully. I know a lot of Oregonians who grew up in Oregon, and they know the story of the Tonkin, but they don't know anything more than that. And these are people who are who like history, and they don't see the bigger picture. I mean, they don't understand the larger context. So I think you have a legacy here that you should showcase. in these events.
That story is not like anywhere else. I mean, this, it has this weight, this significance, this importance. It is this rare jewel, which really determined the Western United States. It determined the fact of what our country looks like today.
It had a big role in determining that the U.S. had a presence, a big presence, huge presence on the West Coast. And of course, you have an absolutely lovely town, which I'm totally in love with your town. And I was here briefly during research 2 years ago for the book, and instantly said, this is a really cool town. And it's been so wonderful to be back doing this reading, and you've all treated me so well here. I mean, I know I'll be back many, 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 many times.
We imagine so. Well, actually, Peter, we see a movie. I see a big screen film about this. I mean, I think this book, because now it's just flying off the shelves in airports throughout the country, and all the congratulations, the great reviews. I mean, this is being on the New York Times bestseller list. So, really, a movie is not far behind.
Well, I hope so. We'll see. I hope so. But I can't tell you how many people I have come up to me after readings, after I give a reading, or after they've read the book, and say, this would be a great movie. And they start casting the characters right away. You know, they have Jonathan Thorne, they have Wilson Price Hunt, they have them all figured out.
So that's exciting.
We'll hope for that.
Yes, we will. Peter, thank you so much for taking the time while you're here in town to come into KMUN and talk to us about the book Astoria, which, you know, the history is famous, but now you have really put the spotlight on this, it sounds like, fairly little-known story outside of the Columbia Pacific region, unless you're a historian, and a very exciting adventure story that is good for all of us to know. Thank you so much for doing this. So we'll look forward to having you back.
Well, Donna, thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be here and look forward to being back.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, all of you who listen to KMUN and Talk of Our Towns. And I want to thank David Paul for engineering today. And also a shout out to local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Remember that you can get Peter's books here in Astoria, the book. You need to read that book. It's amazing. And until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. With gratitude for all the good things in your life, focus on those things that are going well. There will always be dilemmas and problems, but focus on the things that are going well, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment, the only moment which exists on the amazing planet we call Earth.